Yeah, yeah.
Trust me, I'm the real Santa Claus.
Prove it.
Okay, look. You're Mordecai and Rigby. I've been getting letters from you two since you were little. Dear Santa, dude, give me an invisibility cloak. Santa, dude, don't be a jerk. Just give me an invisibility cloak.
This is Santa!
Yeah, I know.
Hey, what gives? How come we never got him?
Look, it's against the rules to give magical gifts.
Whoa, even Santa has to follow rules?
You have no idea.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Excellent Podcast. This is the show where we sit down and watch every single episode of Regular Show and give you a breakdown. I am your co-host, Jason.
And I am your co-host, Josh.
And ho, 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 Merry Christmas. It's March 12th. And, you know, the weather is actually pretty nice out today.
It supposedly hit 71 today.
Yeah,
I wouldn't know because I was inside most of the day.
I was walking outside for a good part of the day. It was pretty hot. I was, like, breaking a sweat. So, obviously today we are watching the Christmas special, season 4, episode 9. And, yeah, it is Christmas in March. It's kind of weird that this episode fell on the first day of good weather in Chicago. But I guess we could still talk about it. What are your favorite things about Christmas?
Sometimes it's the snow, but it's also, I guess it's the vibe of Christmas.
Yeah, you know, just getting together with family, being in the presence of each other, having Christmas food and Christmas music even, I like.
What's the one song that can you stand Mariah Carey's Christmas song? Like that repeats all year, or all the time.
I mean, I don't mind it.
Because I've been seeing, at least this past Christmas, where people are, like, starting to get annoyed that it's just a regular thing. I mean, you can't really escape it.
I feel like Mariah Carey could just retire and live off her royalties from that song and just get a huge income around the Christmas season. Because she's set for life with that song.
I'm pretty sure she is.
Mm-hmm. Not sure how much time you spend on TikTok anymore, but do you remember those Christmas in July posts?
No, I really don't.
It's where people would post, like, in the middle of summer, being like, oh my gosh, it's 150 days until Christmas, and they put Christmas music to it.
Oh, okay, yeah, I do remember that. I just didn't know what it was.
And Loki, even though it was a little weird to see in the summer, it got me in the Christmas spirit. In July,
I would see it and I was like, yeah, it's that people are really hyping up Christmas. And then when it gets to, I guess, the winter time, at least in the Midwest, all you get is like blizzards and snowstorms. Then you're thinking, oh, I wish it was back in July or the summer again.
Yeah, you know, I feel like snow is a hit or miss for me. I like the aesthetic of the snow for like a day or two, and then I want it to go away forever because then it turns into slush and stuff.
I just like rain. Snow is but snow is like, or no, what was I saying? Rain is what I like the most because it's not like, doesn't get anywhere as much, but it also, you know, it's not an inconvenience to a lot of things.
Oh, you know what got me in the Christmas spirit a lot?
What?
When I was a kid, it was those Nickelodeon commercials where they had, like, all the cast members get together and sing a Christmas song.
The cartoons?
No, it had, like, the entire cast of Victorious, iCarly, and Big Time Rush.
I think I remember. Oh, yeah, I do remember that, actually.
And it just reminds me of winter break, like, in elementary school.
I remember in grade school, we had those, like, and they would put up a shopping, like a little Christmas Kris Kringle shopping in the gymnasiums.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Kids would get to purchase like a little tiny gift for one, for a family member, for like a dollar or something.
Yeah, and then they would make us sit in organized rows for 2 hours and expect us to just be there quiet and watch Polar Express. And we did it.
I mean, Polar Express was pretty fun. I mean, I still remember those times before, like, winter break happened, We did absolutely nothing planned for today. We just sat around, did Christmas-themed stuff. It was great.
Oh, those were the days. And they would have, like, a big snack table, and they would have us eat Doritos, Oreos, and Lofthouse cookies on the same exact plate. It was weird, but we did it.
I'm trying to think if, like, I'm curious, do teachers nowadays still do that, or are they just now still pounding on about education, and then once the kids are on their winter vacation, they'll just do that, and they don't actually, like have anything planned?
I think that they have Christmas parties. I know a couple people who are, like, student teaching, and yeah, they have that.
Okay. I guess some things don't change. That's good.
Oh, but speaking of TikTok, back to that. Did you hear that TikTok might be shutting down in the US?
Oh, why is that, actually?
So, yeah, again, we are recording this on March 12th, 2024. And the House of Representatives will be meeting tomorrow to reach a final decision on whether TikTok will be banned in the US. And mm-hmm. I believe this is all due to that it's a Chinese company and there's a huge risk for, like, data breaching.
Yeah.
And President Biden said that he is indeed going to sign in favor of it getting banned if it, like, kind of passes to the next phase, which I always thought that he was for TikTok, you know?
What I think it is, because the election is coming up, he kind of wants to get those votes in his favor so he can potentially get reelected.
Well, we're not going to get into that because that's a whole different thing. You guys know.
I don't know much about politics, but I know that much.
Yeah, well, as for President Trump, he made a statement about TikTok saying, like, oh, if TikTok gets banned, then all these young kids are going to go crazy, which, I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not. I mean, when Vine shut down, we didn't really give a fuck that much. We still had YouTube.
It was sad, but, you know, but TikTok, it definitely, like, well, it's been around longer than Vine, and unlike Vine, people actually made careers on TikTok, like influencers
Hold on. Let me see when did Vine launch?
I think it is it 2013?
Yeah, January 24th, 2013.
Okay, and then I believe it shut down in 2016. So,
3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. TikTok has been around for longer. But then Trump said that what he doesn't like about TikTok possibly getting banned is that I guess he believes that TikTok kind of takes the attention away from Facebook. And if TikTok gets deleted, then Facebook trolls will be even more powerful. Which, I mean,
it's the internet. There's going to be trolls no matter where you go. There's trolls on Twitter. There's trolls on Instagram.
And speaking of that, about, like, it doesn't matter where you go because it's all going to be the same people. A bunch of those, like, anti-TikTok people are being all like, oh, yeah, thank God TikTok is shutting down. Finally, so cringe. But they are the people who use Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing.
It literally, like, I would say if you're a creator, 9.9 times out of 10, everything you post on TikTok, you're going to post on Reels and Shorts, because that's what being a creator is about.
Mm-hmm. And just outreaching or branching out your brand.
Exactly. You know, so, like, sure, there's different, like, niches depending on what platform you use. But realistically, like, say what you want about TikTok, but it changed the world of, like, how we consume media. And, you know, I work in social media, so I'd know.
I think, was it 2020 TikTok was probably the peak, because nobody knew what to do and they just wanted to pass on time. So they went on TikTok to, you know, just get through the day. And I remember spending, like, hours and hours just scrolling through.
I'm going to get to that, but I made the funny connection of how I like how tomorrow they're going to be making a decision on whether to ban TikTok or not. And it's also tomorrow where the entire world shut down, March 13th, and everyone went on TikTok. Yeah, remember it was March
13th. Oh my God, yeah.
When everything, the whole world ended, and It was the day I had to move out of college, come back home. Crazy.
When I'm trying to remember, because I think I had a class a week or two before everything shut down, because we were already hearing shit happening on the other side of the planet at the time.
Yeah.
And then my professor was like, oh, this will most likely be the last class, so be safe, you know, do what you need to do, you know, whatever, whatever. And then I think that was the last. We didn't do anything for the rest of the semester because the world shut down.
I feel like everyone remembers where they were when they got news that, like, whether you're going to work remote or classes are shutting down and you had to just completely change your life, you know?
I think, I don't think I mentioned this before, but I think at least during or half a year in the lockdown, I would still go out just for work and stuff. But then I was just, the relationship that I was in at the time, we would also go out and, you know, do online homework in other mm-hmm. places, because she was the type of person to not want to stay inside all the time. She was more of an outdoorsy person.
You know, it would have made so much sense for us to have a podcast during COVID, because we would have had all the time in the world, you know?
Yeah, but at least for my end, I wouldn't have had the privacy that I have now.
That's true. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, because, what is it? I started out in the closet, and I'm
proud of you, Josh. I'm proud of you. Thanks, man.
I came out the closet. You're welcome. You're welcome, Internet.
You saw what I was doing with that, but
I did.
But yes, a lot of people spent so much time on TikTok, so we're just gonna have to see what's happening tomorrow. Well, I doubt that it's going anywhere. At the very least, it's just gonna be bought out by another company, because I think what happens is, I don't think they're making a decision rather like if it's going to be like outright banned, but rather if it's going to have to be moved to a different host. You know, I know that the CEO of Activision is interested in buying it. So
what?
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, that's bizarre. I assume that like TikTok is such a big industry and it makes so much money, so I knew that there was going to be a lot of investment opportunities from people.
I think with the way this person is buying a lot of these companies, I think Elon is going to be the one to essentially save TikTok.
Please, no. He's been
he already took Twitter. He might as well collect them all.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, hey, thank you, Tyler, for the suggestion on what we should do for the news segment. He was telling me about earlier today, like, oh, what's going to happen? I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. But we're going to keep it moving. It's been 13 minutes that we've been recording, and we, as you know, have a long episode to cover today. Regular chat.
Regular chat.
We're breaking down the show, so we'll open up the internet, we'll ask them what they know.
AI never gets it right, and that's what we'll see. It's a regular show. I'm ChatGPT. It's time for a regular chat. Sit down for a regular chat.
And stop. Welcome to Regular Chat. This is a pre-segment to the show where we say, hey, ChatGPT. What happens in the regular show episode, The Christmas Special? In the regular show episode, The Christmas Special, Mordecai and Rigby accidentally ruin the park's Christmas display, so they travel back in time to try and fix it. Along the way, they encounter various obstacles and characters, including a futuristic Santa Claus. Eventually, they learn the true meaning of Christmas and manage to save the holiday display. Alright, we're gonna channel that for now, and see at the end if ChatGPT was accurate or inaccurate. Let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Christmas special. So we actually have a cold open, and this is the second cold open to exist in regular show. And you might ask yourself, what makes us a cold open? Well, you could tell it's a cold open because there's snow on the ground and there's a huge blizzard. We open on a factory that seems to be in the middle of nowhere. And obviously, because this is a Christmas special, you could assume that this is the North Pole. We get a huge explosion out of the windows of the factory. It's being taken over. There's alarms and red sirens ringing. And then we see this hooded guy. He's wearing like one of those like albino fur hooded coats, and he has a mask on his face, and he's carrying a red Christmas box. It's like a red box with a ribbon tied around it, and he's kind of holding it under his arm like he's shielding it. He runs out of the building, out of the fire, and then it kind of looks like this factory's on a military base. He runs into this garage, he shoots the lock open, and he runs past all these like military jets and airplanes and things, and he goes to the backside, and he actually boards Santa's sled, and we can see that there are 9 reindeers hooked onto it. Not sure if the name Rudolph is copyrighted, but I'm pretty sure that reindeer at the front is supposed to have a red nose. But the guy gets inside of the sled and goes, yeah, and then he flies away up into the sky. Again, it's still blizzarding, and he passes by a sign that says Outer Limits of the North Pole. When he's in the sky, he finally takes off his mask, and we get a face reveal, and he's obviously like an elf because his ears are long. He grabs the present that he has, and he laughs evilly. Right as he's about to open it, all of a sudden the sled kind of like tilts almost to the side, knocking him over. And then he's like, huh? And then we see a huge silhouette figure coming up on him, and it's revealed to be who we could assume is Santa Claus, and he's riding a hoverboard like from Back to the Future. And we're gonna get to all these pop culture references at the very end. Santa grabs the box, and then he takes off his mask, and Santa says, I can't let you do this, Quilgen. So the villain's name is Quilgen. Quilgen says, you don't have a choice. And then he kind of sweeps Santa, making him trip with his foot. Quilgen grabs the box, and then they kind of go back and forth fighting for it. Santa puts Quilgen in a headlock, and then Quilgen kind of puts his foot like underneath Santa's chin to like stick him there. And then he grabs the box, and right as Quilgen is opening it up, this like glowing sensation is starting to come out of it. And then as Santa is stuck, he yells to the front. He said, Rudolph, Dina Naza. And then we could see Rudolph. So that is indeed Rudolph. He's at the front, and he turns around and he shoots a red laser beam at Quilgen, making him let go of the box. Santa grabs the box, and then he jumps off the back of the sled and skydives forward. Quilgen leans over the sled, and right as Santa is about to get out of his render distance, Quilgen pulls out a pistol and starts shooting at Santa, making him unconscious, free-falling all the way to the ground. Quilgen stares at the winter sky and says, Merry Christmas, Santa Claus. We cut to black, and we fade into the regular show credit intro. It's different. We have different music, and instead of like the purple black, it's like a red green, obviously to resemble that this is the Christmas special. Very cool stuff. Before we continue on, Santa in that scene, he says Dina Naza, and that's what he kind of says to Rudolph to make him shoot. And I actually had to ask our friend Ethan what that meant, because it's German. Dina Naza, Yeah, that is a German phrase that roughly translates to serve nose. But in this context, Santa is telling Rudolph to shoot with your nose. And we see that Rudolph used it as a weapon. I did some Google searching, and this phrase can also sometimes mean to have your nose full. And it's used to express when you're annoyed with something. You know what I mean? So, for example, let's say that I show up to Oktoberfest in Germany, and they're all out of sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, Dina Naza. It's kind of like Denkfahrer, only for German people, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
that's interesting.
Yeah, thanks Ethan for the translation. Also, I think that is the second time that we've seen a gun being fired in a regular show.
I was gonna say like I'm pretty because guns aren't really shown in this show. I mean, it is, but it's not actually like bullets. It's more so like laser, like pew pew lasers, not pew pew bullet.
Yeah, we've seen Mordecai and Rigby like watching TV, and those characters are using guns, but. Yeah. This is the the second time we've actually seen one of the main on-screen characters using a gun. The first time being Fuzzy Dice.
I was gonna say, like, the Fuzzy Dice was the first one that comes to my mind.
Yeah.
This is the second. So, as soon as the intro credits are done, we cut to the park house, where it's all decorated with Christmas lights, and a very iconic song, Christmas song, plays, and I can't remember the title for the life of me, but it's the first lyrics are Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree.
So it is called Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree by Brenda Lee, and that came out in 1958.
Can you imagine the money that's been passed down to the artist's family because of this song that came out in the 50s?
See, well, the thing about Christmas music is all those classic songs have been out for a long time that they fall under public domain. So either they're making a lot of money or they're making no money at all.
Yeesh. Okay. Well, I guess it depends on how well their legal team put up back in the day.
Yeah.
So anyways, we get quick little montages of what's going on inside the house, because it appears that the park is hosting a party. First, we go inside the kitchen. We get a little pan shot of everyone, of multiple people, more than just the park members, enjoying a party. We see that there's a food table in the kitchen. People are making cookies. Muscle Man drops a gingerbread cookie on a tray, and he's talking to Skips, and he says, "Man, these cookies are great. You know who else makes really great cookies?" And before he even says, "My mom," he actually says, "My Michael's Bakery on 5th and Western." And then he asks Skips if he's been there.
You could also see the JG Quintel guy at this party.
Oh, really? What? Wait, where?
It's like right at the beginning in the pan shot. He's talking to Skips.
Oh, okay.
And again, with the whole Christmas thing, just hearing the music and seeing Christmas ham and punch on the table, this is making me feel festive, and it's the middle of March.
We're only 3 months into the year, man.
Yeah.
You got 9 more to go.
Also, this is the last episode that we're recording before I go away on my tropical vacation, so I'm literally feeling festive right now.
I was going to say, like, I know there are people who spend, like, Christmas and different holidays in, like, the Bahamas or in, like, warmer weather, but I don't know. Would you choose that over snow?
See, I don't know, because I think it was last year I went to California to celebrate New Year's out there, and, you know, Christmas was already over, but it still felt weird, you know, that I was around, like, a tropical setting.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I really don't like the winter, I'm glad that at least Illinois has seasons, you know?
Yeah, we experience all four seasons.
Yeah, but continue.
Continuing on with the montage, we go into the living room where we see Mordecai and Rigby talking to each other, chatting it up. Benson is actually talking to a past character. I'm pretty sure her name was like Claire or Audrey.
Audrey.
Or something. Sorry, it started with something elegant.
Yeah.
We see Thomas walking down the stairs, and we go to Benson talking to Audrey, right? Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
She points out to Benson saying, "Oh my gosh, that sweater's so cool." Benson is taking in the compliment. He's like, "Oh yeah, you know, it's just for fun, festive." And chuckles a little bit and says, "I like to get loose on the holidays." Audrey continues, says, like, "Oh, I mean, like, are you wearing that for the ugliest sweater, right?" And Benson's all awkward. He's like, "Oh, yeah, right, right." Psst. Tries to place it off all cool. And he continues on by saying, "Isn't it how funny how ugly it is?" He chuckles a little bit more and takes a sip of his drink, and then points behind him and says, "I'm gonna go get more soda."
So,
and he's awkwardly walking out.
Do you own an ugly Christmas sweater?
No, but every single year I have an elf onesie that I wear.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Me and CJ, it was like our first Christmas we ever spent together. She got us matching Christmas onesies.
Ooh.
and we still wear them every single year. As for Christmas sweaters, I have a sweater that it's like a parody of Home Alone, the Christmas movie, except it says Home Malone, and it has Post Malone, like, instead of Kevin doing like his like on his cheeks, it's Post Malone doing like the his like hand sign that he does.
Yeah.
And it always gets a good laugh from friends and family.
I've seen, like, as we got older, or everyone's been getting older, people have been wearing more explicit Christmas-themed holiday sweaters. Like, if you go into Zoomy, or is it Zoom? No, not Zoomies. Spencer's. They have a lot of explicit hot or explicit Christmas-themed sweaters.
Yeah, like, they're... There's, like, sweaters that say, like, Santa's little ho-ho-ho or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys have probably seen them. They're wild. But we pan over to Pops, and he's at the Christmas tree, and there's a bunch of candy canes hanging off of it as ornaments, and Pops has his wallet out, and he's collecting all the candy canes, being like, uh-huh, Christmas! And, you know, it... Pops is doing that because he thinks that candy is money, so this is definitely a Christmas season for him. And then we cut to Mordecai and Rigby, and they're singing a rap song, and it goes...
We just wanna wish you a merry, merry Christmas!
Bells jingle!
Kris Kringle! Wrap your gift like this, son! Rap, 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 rap! Tape, tape, bow!
And they're actually singing this into a speakerphone, and Margaret is on the other line, and... I had the note when they say tape, tape, bow, it kind of looks like they're hitting the folks.
What? Okay, wait, I gotta see this.
you know the folks, though.
I think, yeah, I do remember. Now I see it.
So Mordecai and Rigby get done singing, and Mordecai picks up the phone and puts it back to his ear, and he's like, did you hear it, Margaret? Yeah, well, you gotta see it with the moves. All right, well, have fun with your parents. Merry Christmas, Margaret. He hangs up the phone and Rigby's like, did she like it? And he's like, yeah, I think so. We go to Benson in the kitchen trying to get soda, and he sees Mr. Maylard, who's putting on his hat and scarf. And he's like, oh, are you leaving already, Mr. Maylard? And Maylard is all like, it's Christmas Eve and I'm a busy man. 6 more parties to attend. Ugh, that sweater is terrible. Good party, though. And he just walks away. Benson's like, hey, I'll take it. Merry Christmas, sir. Haha. Well, all right. He goes to pour himself some more soda, but the 2-liter is empty. And he's like, oh, man. Hey, Thomas. Could you go get some more soda from Skips's garage? Thomas is on the stairs, but his head is stuck in the railing, like his head is wedged in there, and he's like, oh, well, I'd love to, but Benson's all like, duh. Mordecai and Rigby immediately come up and say, yeah, we'll go get it. Benson's like, oh, okay, great. But Mordecai's like, this counts as your Christmas gift from us, though. And Benson's all like, my gift is you getting me more soda? Fine, whatever. And then Mordecai and Rigby high five, and they're like, yeah, 'tis better to give than to receive. And then they walk out of the house, and Thomas is still there stuck, and he's like, oh, can someone give me a hand? And then we clock wipe to outside.
So Mordecai and Rigby are walking outside in the snow, and they're talking amongst each other. Mordecai starts off by saying, man, don't you just love Christmas? Rigby replies with, if you're getting gifts, I mean. And Mordecai agrees by saying, dude, of course that's what I mean. Rigby continues with the conversation, saying, Christmas should be like minimum once a month. Mordecai repeats it in a little jingle. And then all of a sudden, they both spot something coming down from the sky. Mordecai says, huh? Dude, what is that? And he points out in the sky. And we see this ball of light coming straight down from the sky, and it hits inside of Skips's garage. The two both rush in, open the door to see what fell in Skips's garage. And then we pan down to see that it's actually Santa Claus who landed on a cart that was parked inside. The two go, whoa. They go over and say, dude, are you all right? It's actually Santa Claus. He's out of breath, very weak, and he tells him, please, take take the box. Take the... Oh, man. As he turns over and realizes who he's talking to, Santa says, "You too?" Rigby picks up the box and says, "What's in it?" As he's about to open it, Santa kind of rushes himself up, but he can't because he's in pain. He says, "No, don't look into it. You must destroy it." They ask why and then ask, "Wait, who are you?" Santa reveals that he's Santa Claus, but they don't believe him. Mordecai's like, "Wait, what, Santa Claus? No, Santa McMurphy. Yes, Santa Claus." He keeps groaning because every time he's speaking, it gets worse. They go on to say, like, "Come on, you don't even look like Santa Claus." "Yeah, Santa's all fat and junk. He smells like gingerbread cookies. He's got rosy cheeks. And yeah, your cheeks are more bruised colored. And you smell like you stepped in something." Santa is getting annoyed by all this, and he's like, "Well, sorry to disappoint you, but I was just shot at and fell 3,500 feet and crashed through a garage."
Damn. So real quick, I did some calculations here. So yes, we could see that Santa did indeed land in Skip's garage when he was fighting Quilgen from the North Pole. If you look back in the episode, Quilgen started flying out of the North Pole at 31 seconds at the very beginning. And we see Santa fall out of the sled at the end of that scene 54 seconds later. I kept track. To eventually land in Skip's garage. As you know, regular show takes place in California. And the distance between California and the North Pole is 3,677.27 miles away.
Okay.
I did a Google search, and a flight from the nearest airport to the North Pole going to LAX will take you 9 hours and 23 minutes, and this would require the plane to travel at 392 miles per hour, which is typical for a passenger plane going overseas.
Yeah.
But Quilgen here, he flew to California in less than a minute from the North Pole. And if you do the math, that means that they were flying at a speed of 220,636 miles per hour, which is about 290 times faster than the speed of sound.
Can I rebuttal that statement?
Okay.
Santa's sleigh.
Oh, it's magical?
It's magic. I'm pulling the magic card.
Honestly, that is the only logical explanation, really.
That, how do you think he does this shit in all in one night?
I saw this thing where someone said, like, how the hell does Santa, like, fly to every single house, have time to park, shimmy down the chimney, leave the gifts, eat the cookies, and go back up and fly away? And he has to do that for every house on the block. Well, I mean, not the Jewish kids, but, you know what I mean. And then they had to, I think they calculated that he had, like, less than a millisecond to spend in each house, which is crazy.
Ooh, actually, there's this one animated movie, I forgot what it was called, but it's where Santa has, like, a giant airship, and the way he delivers presents is he has his elves help him. So he, like, stops at a neighborhood, there's, like, a few elves that drop into each house, and they put the gifts for whatever kid, and then go right back up, and that's how he does it.
I mean, yep, Santa is magical. I saw this one TikTok where, this kid asked Alexa if reindeers can fly, and freaking Alexa spoiled the surprise, being like, "No, reindeers cannot fly." And then the dad was like, "Hey, no, Alexa, stop. No, no, hey, buddy, Alexa doesn't know what she's talking about." And then some of the comments were saying, like, "Oh, you should have told them that, like, she was talking about normal reindeer, but Santa's reindeer are magical."
So. It's almost like, was it a kid getting their... Or was it revealing that the Tooth Fairy isn't real?
Exactly. But we continue with Santa Claus, and he's still in pain. And he keeps going on about how, like, Santa supposedly is supposed to look all jolly and hot and everything. But he tells Mordecai and Rigby, being like, "No, that stuff is a lie. That's just made up by advertising companies." And then he says, "Trust me, I'm the real Santa Claus." And they're all like, "Prove it then." Santa sighs. He's like, "Okay, look, You're Mordecai and Rigby. I've been getting letters from you two since you were little. Dear Santa, dude, give me an invisibility cloak. Dear Santa, dude, don't be a jerk. Just get me an invisibility cloak. And then that's when they realize Rigby is like, oh my gosh, this is Santa. And Mordecai's like, yeah, I know. And then they are like, hey, come on. What gives? How come we never got them? And then Santa's all like, hey, it's against the rules to give magical gifts. And then Rigby's all like, wow, even Santa has to follow rules? And Santa's all like, you have no idea. And Mordecai says like, all right, so you're Santa, but what are you doing here? And what's in this box? And Santa says, actually, it's not what's in the box, but the box itself that matters. And then we get a little ripple fade to a flashback. It all started a few months ago. I was approached by my lead toy designer, Quilligan, who was excited about a breakthrough he'd made on his life's work. And we kind of see like a factory conveyor belt. All of the elves are working. And then we see like a very like young Quilligan who like looks all excited. He walks up to Santa and he gives him some blueprints. The idea was simple. An empty box that when opened would give the child what they desired most. Little did I know that the key component was a dark magic, and we could see Quilligan like underneath the spotlight, like very nervously putting this sort of crystal into the box with tongs. And then the box starts to like spin and gets all like magical and stuff with dark magic. Santa continues saying, we used a focus group to test how it would work in a Christmas Day scenario, and we're in like a little like testing lab, and we could see a little simulation of a family, a real family, a part of a focus group, acting out Christmas morning, and where they were given a box. And then we see a kid open the box, and then the yellow light starts to shine out of the box. And then as soon as he looks at it, his pupils start to dilate because things got ugly. The box had a power over people. It brought out the worst in them. I ordered that the box be locked away. And we could see that the family, like, when as they're fighting over the box, like, even the parents try to intervene. But then when the parents get a hold of the box, they start to get hypnotized by it. So, yeah, basically the box, because it gives you whatever your heart desires, it makes you go crazy for it. And if anyone else has their hands on it, you immediately, like, want to, like, fight them and take it from them, you know? So we could see the box being locked away in a vault, and any work pertaining to it has to be destroyed. And we see a bunch of like guys in hazmat suits, like destroying all of like the chemistry labs and using flamethrowers to like burn it all. And Quilligan is like trying to put a stop to it, to all of his hard work. But then Santa pushes him away, being like, no, it's dangerous. And then we kind of get like a zoom in on Quilligan, and Santa says, I should have known he'd come back for revenge. We ripple back into real time, saying, the box is in your hands now, and you must destroy it. If Quilligan gets it back, he'll use its power to get what he wants most, the destruction of Christmas forever. And Mordecai's all like, oh, Christmas gone forever? Don't worry, you could count on us, Santa, because the box is in good hands. Wait, where is it? Oh, I thought you were holding it. Oops. Oh, here it is. And then that's like a little funny moment there. And then Santa's all like, oh, why'd I have to land in this garage? All right, come on, Santa. Let's get you out of here. And then Mordecai and Rigby try to like lift him by like the arms. And then, but they can't pick him up because he's hurt. And Santa's all like, no, just go. Leave me. The box needs to be destroyed first and foremost. Ugh. Quilligan won't stop until he gets it. And then he kind of faints and his head like falls to the side. Mordecai's like, Santa, oh man, he just passed out. We gotta find help. Come on. And they run off with the box to go get the rest of the park members.
So Mordecai, Rigby lead Benson, Muscleman, Fives, Skips, and Potts back to Skips's place where Santa was. And Mordecai says, he's in here. But as they get to the place where Santa was, he is no longer there. Benson says, Santa, huh? You guys would make up anything to get out of work. To their disbelief, they keep saying, he was right here. Maybe he's just hiding somewhere. Muscle Man says, weak prank bros. And Pops comes in saying, I agree. Bad show. Mordecai says, like, it's not a prank. Look, Santa gave us this box. It can give people whatever they want, but it turns them evil. Benson, knowing that they would make something up, gives a sigh and puts his palm on his face saying, give me that. He yoinks the box out of Mordecai's hands and opens it, and he says, I bet this thing is empty. So he opens the box and his pupils start dilating, and he says, what the? Muscle Man comes over and he says, I want to see. Then his pupils start dilating over, and he says, oh, sweet. Rigby runs over to Muscle Man, try to grab it away, but Muscle Man pulls away saying, no, give it. So then they all start fighting over it. Fives eventually picks it up. Pops goes and grabs it. His eyes start dilating. Then it's an all-out brawl to try to get the box. But then Skips comes in to shut the box, yelling, enough! And then this snaps everyone back to reality. And then Benson says, where did you get that? He says, I told you, Santa gave it to us. Look, we need your help. We have to destroy this thing to save Christmas. And then Muscle Man, without hesitation, says, then what are we waiting for? He goes over by a nearby wall holding a sledgehammer and goes over to the box that's on the ground and tries to smash it. But with its dark magic, the sledgehammer breaks and pushing Muscle Man towards a wall, knocking him over. And then Skips picks it up and starts smelling it a little. And he says, this box is made from dark magic. It can't be destroyed by any normal methods. It has to be taken deep beneath the earth and cast into fiery lava.
So I just realized that Muscle Man's wearing a sweater with a dreidel on it, which means that he's Jewish.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's ever been mentioned before, but I do know that way later in the series, he does the Mazel Tov tradition at his wedding, which is cool.
Oh, okay, so, all right. That's cool, actually. I never knew that.
Yeah, it's cool that the creators, like, in a Christmas special, they were able to throw some, like, a Jewish representation in there.
Honestly, that's a good thing that they're showing, or they're diversifying their cast rather than just having everybody be this same copy-pasted person, essentially.
Yeah, this is what I like about the show, because a lot of times, like, a show has, like, a bunch of characters, and they're all pretty much the same, but each character actually has a personality. I'm pretty sure the only one that you could really argue against is High Five Ghost. But,
yeah.
But we do explore him a little bit more in later episodes. But every character is unique in their own way.
I was going to say, the plot, I wrote this in my notes, the plot to destroy the box is pretty much similar to the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, you are correct, and we will be getting to that in lunchtime.
Sweet.
So, we clock wipe over to where Skips supposedly says that the molten lava volcano is. It's East Pines Park, the rival park, and Rigby's all like, "Aw, here? Gene and those rival park guys are losers." And then Skips doesn't acknowledge that. He's like, "The lava pit's in an abandoned mineshaft on the other side of the park. Come on, let's go." And then, so they're kind of like, they're quietly sneaking through the park because obviously they're not supposed to be there. They're the rival park. We pass by a snowman, and then real quick, Rigby puts down the magical box, and then we could hear him chuckling, and Mordecai's like, "What are you doing?" And Rigby walks up to the snowman. He's like, "I'm just gonna fix their snowman real quick." And he grabs the carrot, but then as soon as the carrot, like, comes down, the eyes of the snowman start beating red, and then the hat comes off of the snowman, triggering a siren, and then all of a sudden, they're surrounded by, like, 20 park workers of Gene's. So we don't know exactly what Rigby was gonna do there, but I think I know an adult joke when I see one. I wrote that Rigby was probably gonna take the carrot and coal eyes and rearrange them to look like dick and balls on the snowman.
On the face, or on, like, where dick and balls would be,
like, down south? He would take the carrot and put him down there, because I've seen people do that before.
That's funny.
So yeah, they're all surrounded, and then one of the leader guys says, "Freeze, step away from the snowman's carrot," And then they're all, like, muttering and stuff. We fade back to Skips' garage that doesn't have Santa in it. And we actually see Quilgen and a bunch of his, like, fighter guys, his workers. And Quilgen, like, kind of sniffs out the crushed car and he says, like, the box was here. Let's move out. And then we could see them, like, moving away on a bunch of, like, snowmobiles. We cut inside of Gene's quarters at East Pines, and all of the park members are tied up, even Fives, who's kind of, like, on a leash. And Gene is all like, I can't believe it. I thought the prank wars were over, but here you come to pull some sort of lame, Yuletide prank. And then Benson's like, look, we're not here to prank you. We're just here to destroy this box and your lava pit. And Gene, he's kind of pacing around the room like a mob boss. He's like, oh, sure, that makes sense. What? Someone got you another horrible sweater for Christmas, and now you want to trash it? And then Gene grabs the box that's sitting on Mordecai's lap, and Mordo is like, hey, you don't get it. The box is dangerous. It was given to us by Santa. And then Gene is all like, oh, Santa. Larry, open the box. And he goes to his worker, Larry, and Larry is all like, but what if it's a prank, sir? And Gene's all like, well, that's what I want to find out, and that's why you're gonna open it. And then Larry kind of slowly opens the box, and then obviously he's kind of taken aback by the light. He starts to get all excited, and then Gene snatches it back. He's like, hey, gimme. And then he starts to get under hypnosis, and then Gene and Larry are fighting, and then another worker starts to get involved, and then it's kind of like a big free-for-all. They start punching each other, and Mordecai is like, hey, stop it. Now do you see what's happening? This is why we have to destroy the box. If it fell into the wrong hands, it could mean the end of Christmas forever. And then all of a sudden we hear a siren beeping, and then we cut over to a guy like looking at the park surveillance cameras, and Gene says, hey, what is it? The worker says, there's unidentified men infiltrating the park, sir. And then we could see, like, on the cameras that Gene and his goons are, like, flying through the park, and they're beating up every single park worker in sight. Gene's all like, what the, who's that? And Mordecai says, oh, that must be the elf who's after the box. And Rigby's all like, it's that dude? I thought he'd be a small elf. Come on, Gene, help us. That guy is evil, dude. And then all the park workers are kind of like shouting over each other, trying to get Gene to just have a heart for once. Gene kind of freezes, and he continues to see Quilgen punch out all the cameras. And then everyone's all like, oh, come on, don't you care about Christmas? We're all at stake. And then Gene kind of grabs a little family photo that I guess was sitting on his desk. And it's a picture of him, his wife, and I guess he has a kid at home, and they're all, like, happy, sharing a moment on Christmas morning. And then this kind of gets to Gene, and he looks over at the park workers, but it's too late because, oh no, he's here, and we could see the doorknob rattling. And then we see on one of the cameras, Gene is, like, kind of, like, body-chucking the outside door with his shoulder, trying to break in. And then we close up on Gene, who it kind of looks like he knows what to do. But Rigby says, ah, it's too late. And it's at this moment where we cut to black. And we have hit the 11-minute mark in the episode, meaning that the show will cut to commercial when it airs on TV due to formatting. I wrote the note that I'm sure the creators loved making these 22-minute episodes because we are only halfway into the episode, but we haven't even scratched the surface on what's about to go down, you know?
Yep. And also, you kept calling Quilgen Gene.
Oh, shit. I mean, Quilgen, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Quilgen.
I heard it. I'm just like, Gene is buzzing through the door. I'm like, he's in there with the park members.
You know, I'm still associating Gene as a bad guy, so I just defaulted to that.
Ah, you're right.
Before we continue, I'm going to go to the bathroom.
All right, go for it.
Okay. My room is like kind of hot because of the outside, so I'm drinking a bunch of cold water. Okay, BRB.
Well, I might as well entertain the people while I'm here. How are you doing, people? Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure Jason's going to be hearing this anyways, just because. Actually, you know what? How long does it take for him to go to the bathroom? Because I'm pretty sure he's, like, sprinting out of his chair into the bathroom, going pee, washing his hands, and then sprinting right back, unless he's grabbing another thing of water, then it might take him, I'm gonna give him one more minute, and then he'll be back. Because I can't tell if he's going to come back or not. Because unlike my mic, his mic is like, it only picks up a voice. Actually, no, I'm very mistaken. Every time he talks, I can hear like the backgrounds of everything. Like I can hear ambulance or sirens going off. I can hear cars honking and shit. So it's whenever he speaks, but when it comes on my mic, you can hear everything. That's why I kind of don't. I mean, I like my mic, but at the same time, I kind of don't like it because I kind of wish it was how Jason's is. But it's okay. I like my mic the way it is. I wouldn't trade it unless it was dying. Then yes, I would definitely trade it. I don't think I can talk for more than a minute. Oh, it's been a minute. Oh, or shit. It just passed a minute. Now it's got like a few seconds until
I'm back.
It comes back. Oh, okay. Yeah. I kind of get it. Yes.
What's up?
I was like betting how long it would take for you to go to the bathroom. You'll listen. You'll hear it.
You know what they say, boys pee fast, and especially if you have a hot mic like in the other room, you're going to want to go fast.
I mean, imagine if you have to, instead of peeing, you have to poo. Like, how fast do you think you can shit and then come back?
Well, actually, right before we hopped on, so we started recording at 5 o'clock today, and I think it was like 4:51. I was like, oh man, I gotta go number two. Yeah, I got time, and I think I was back in my room at like maybe like 4:56 or something.
Oh, that's not bad. Oh no, I just thought of the grossest thing ever.
Are you gonna say it or?
I'll say it. Like, okay. Poo speed run.
Oh god. Well, hey, you could prepare for that speed run by drinking a lot of water. You stay regular, kids, especially when you're watching regular show.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
You know, it's funny. When I was in the bathroom, I was like, it's funny that I'm going during the commercial break, because that's when kids would usually go use the bathroom.
I mean, the commercials don't even last that long.
Yeah.
They're like, what, a minute of commercials? And then something it goes like right that. Back into the show?
Yeah. But continue.
So the rattling door busts open, and it's actually one of Gene's employees having a full arm of eggnog in cups. They all sigh, and the worker with the eggnog says, "Geez, you didn't hear me struggling with the door?" And then he goes and he rubs it off and says, "Yeah, speaking of doors, there's some elf dude out there trying to break in, screaming about destroying Christmas. Who wants eggnog?"
real quick, quick story. So, it was this last Christmas where I was spending it at my aunt's house, and the whole family was there, and my Lolo, my grandpa, was there, and we were all enjoying some eggnog. And I had never actually tried spiked eggnog before. I only had like the regular kind. Mm-hmm. But we were all having it, and it was really good, by the way. But we all stood up to go walk over to the dinner table, and as soon as everyone stood up, my grandpa, he got up and he started walking. He's like, "Oh, I think I got the drunk." And that's so funny because that's not something he would say ever. Continue.
So we get a really close zoom shot of Gene saying, "Let's ride." And we cut to the next scene where Gene and the park members are all riding in snowmobiles going towards a mountain in the East Pines Park where the lava pit is. So they pull up to the entrance of the mine, and Gene says, this is as far as I go. Benson thanks Gene for letting them get to the mountain. But Gene says, "Save the things for when you actually destroy that thing." And he holds out his hand, and Benson shakes it. Gene says, "I'll hold off that elf for as long as I can." And he drives off into the distance. And before he disappears off screen, he says to the park members, "Oh yeah, one more thing. Watch out for the booby traps on the way to the lava pit." Benson is kind of confused by this, and he says, "Booby traps? What booby traps?" And Gene doesn't care to explain it. He just drives off saying, "Merry Christmas." Pops is getting cold feet, saying maybe we shouldn't go in. But Muscle Man is confident, and he says, it's probably just another one of Gene's lame pranks. Mordecai doesn't care. He says, I guess we'll just have to go in and find out. Come on. So they drive in the mine with their snowmobiles, but then they get stuck at a dead end. Without another word, a trap door makes them fall right inside the cave, going down a slide. They're all screaming. This is giving me, have you ever seen the movie Ice Age?
Oh, yeah, this is Ice Age vibes.
Exactly. That was the one scene from Ice Age that comes to mind.
That's such a fun little sequence there.
It is.
Remember when the first time you ever came over, we got drunk and watched Ice Age?
Oh, my God. We watched Ice Age, we watched Dumb and Dumber. I fell asleep like 20 minutes in.
Tried watching Dumb and Dumber.
It wasn't even an attempt.
Right. Continue.
So at the end of the slide, they all go off on a ramp and they crash their snowmobiles on the other side of the platform. They're all on the ground groaning. Rigby and everyone else get up and they each kind of check on each other saying, is everyone okay? All right, come on, let's keep moving. And then once Mordecai turns to walk the other way, he gets jump scared by this skeleton who got impaled in between two walls with spikes coming out of it. Muscle Man says, chill bro, it's just a skeleton. Benson goes on and says, yeah, someone must have put it there to scare us. And look, there's the door right past it. All we need to do is just go around. And as Benson is about to step into the little section where the skeleton is, he steps on a panel that goes down and a spike trap grazes him on the cheek and it pushes Benson back a little. Mordecai helps Benson up, saying, this must be one of the booby traps. Pops points out on the side of the wall and he says, there's writing here. Skips goes over to read it and they ask, what does it say? Skips, in quotes, reads out what's on the wall and it says, crack the code, a door will open. One wrong step, forever broken.
And the writing isn't exactly in English. It's like this weird hieroglyphics that only Skips would know how to translate.
Oh, yeah. And there's images below it with, I'm guessing, the pattern on how to solve it.
Yeah. This trap is basically like a... I might have seen this in Indiana Jones.
Oh.
This is like a common Egyptian trap that you see in TV shows where it's like, you gotta step on the right combination, but if you step in the wrong place, you get impaled in the head, you know?
Do you know what... Have you ever seen Despicable Me, any of them?
I only saw the first one, but not any of the others.
Is it because of the minions?
No, I just didn't care to, watch the rest of them.
I should, though. The new one is having Gru and Lucy's kid.
Oh, yeah. I saw this meme where it's like, yo, Gru canonically had sex.
Yeah, he did. Gru somehow fucked.
Yeah. But the park workers need to figure out how to get to the other side, and Mordecai's like, okay, we just need to step on the right panels and we'll live. And Benson's all like, I'm not stepping on one of those again. And then so someone suggests oh, let's just use that guy, and they were talking about the skeleton. So Mordecai kind of crouches down and he is holding the skeleton's shins, controlling his legs, and he's like, okay, Rigby, read me the instructions. And Rigby says, okay, middle, left, left, middle, up, right, down. And they're kind of struggling to read it. Mordecai is kind of using the skeleton to push down the little panels, but it's not working. And then Muscle Man, he's like, oh, hold on to this. And he takes off his dreidel sweater and he's like, here, Benson, be careful with it because my mom gave it to me. And then Benson's all like, wait, Muscle Man. And then Muscle Man jumps into the middle of the panels and he basically dance revolutions his way through the trap, and he's dodging all the spikes around and stuff. He ends up solving the puzzle and then the door behind them opens. clearing all the rest of the park workers to walk through. Muscle Man gets out of the trap and he's like, "Woo, that thing didn't even touch me." And then all of a sudden, all the spikes come out at the very end. And then he's like, "Whoa, guys, I almost died." And Benson's like, "Come on, let's keep moving." And as they're walking forward, Muscle Man's kind of trailing behind. He's like, "No, like, did you see that? I almost died. I really almost died." But no one really cares. Next, all the park workers slide down the next cave, but obviously Fives is like hovering behind them. And we cut back to Gene's headquarters, and it looks like Quilgan has kind of hijacked the room and he has tied Gene up. And Quilgan is looking at the cameras and he's telling his worker buddy to stop and zoom in. And we could see on the footage that Mordecai and Rigby are inside of the mines, and he could kind of see them pulling up to it with the box in hand. Gene is like, "Haha, you'll never make it in time. They probably destroyed the box out. Hey!" And then Quilgan kind of flips Gene on his face because he's a vending machine and Gene can't talk anymore. Quilgan is all like, "We're moving out." We clock wipe over to back to the park workers, and there's like a big ice looking bridge, and at the very end there's a pinball machine. And Skips reads the hieroglyphics on it, saying, "Oh, it's another booby trap. Rack up points, a bridge will flow. Lose a ball, watch out below." And that's because the bridge is over this big, like, cave crevasse thing, and it's probably bottomless. Mordecai kind of brushes the snow off of the pinball machine, being like, "Aw, dude, nobody plays these things. It doesn't even have a screen." And Benson from the back, he's like, "Move. This thing is clearly before your time." And I wrote that he's probably good at pinball because he's a stick hockey player.
I mean, or he could be just a very good retro, I wouldn't say retro gamer, but you know what I mean? Those, he used to play stick hockey, pinball machines.
Yeah.
Anything that didn't involve a televised screen.
Yeah, he's more into like the mechanical games like this.
Yeah.
So he starts the game and he's playing pinball, and you know, it's just your typical pinball game where he keeps racking up points and hitting off ramps and stuff. And we could actually see that, just like as the riddle said, the more points Benson racks up, the further the bridge grows. And they're cheering him on, being like, "Yeah, keep going, Benson." But then Benson accidentally drops a ball, and then a portion of the platform that they're standing on breaks away. Muscle Man almost falls, but then Skips kind of lunges forward and grabs him by the sweater, pulling him back. Rigby kind of taunts Benson, being like, "Oh, looks like it's before your time too." Mordecai punches Rigby and says, "Hey, you got this, Benson." Benson continues playing the game, racking up more and more points, and then right as the bridge is almost going to reach the end where they need to go, Fives notices, being like, "Hey, guys," and it looks like Quilgan somehow caught up to them, and they're at the entrance of the room, and then Benson kind of yells at them, being like, "Everyone go, now, now," and then Quilgan is like, "Get them," and then Benson's like kind of screaming, like trying to rack up as much points as he can. He eventually is able to build the bridge far enough to make an entrance, and then all the rest of the park workers have made it to the end, but then that means Benson has to go. But of course that means that he has to leave the pinball machine behind, meaning that the balls will fall to the bottom. We get like this little shot where Benson is being chased by Quilgan's goons, and then the ice breaks below them, making all four of them fall down. Benson barely makes it, and he like lunges forward, making it to the end. And then unfortunately, Quilgan is still at the front of the bridge, and there's no more bridge left for him. The pinball machine isn't even there because that fell too. And Quilgan gives off the stereotypical, "No!"
They go down even further via slide, and Mordecai says, "Dude, that was close." They all get up and they see a golden circle in front of them. Skips goes over to it and reads the hieroglyphics on the floor. And he says, "We made it to the final trial. Wrestle a bear, don't lose."
The joke here is that the previous two hieroglyphics are all like mystical, like rhyming and riddles and stuff. But this one is just like, Russell LeBaire, don't lose. Good luck. Go ahead.
Yeah. Because who would want to wrestle a bear?
Oh, well, there is one wrestler that works at the park, and who is it?
It is actually Pops. So they hear a distant roar, and a polar bear comes out growling. He steps into the circle, looking all ferocious and furious. Muscle Man points out, we're supposed to fight that? Pops is happy to participate against the bear. Benson's very concerned. He's like, but Pops, against a bear? That's not a fair match. Pops' wise wisdom words, he tells Benson, all men are beasts on the wrestling mat. He takes off his proper jacket, his shirt, and his hat, and all he's left is with his tank top and his shoes and pants. So as Pops is walking up to face the bear is like cracking his neck, and Rigby watching, being really bad at saying things, he says, dude, he's totally dead. And Mordecai kind of quickly snaps at him saying, Rigby! Pops is up against the bear. They get into their stance, and Pops says, all right, bear, I accept your challenge. So Pops is going at the bear. They're grabbing each other, holding each other, trying to get one another on the bottom. The polar bear throws Pops over his head, but Pops gets up. They try going at it again, but then they get to the point where Pops is actually getting pinned down by the bear, and everyone is getting nervous, and they say, he's not gonna make it. Wait, look. And then, with every bit of strength, Pops uses his left hand to pull himself up. Good show, bear, but this is a match you cannot win. The bear roars, and Pops gets up, flipping the bear over to his back, and Pops pinning down the bear, and the bear is struggling to get out. And it looks like he's about to lose. And then we see that the bear submits defeat, and Pops yells out, pinned, as he slaps the ground with his other hand. The bear falls down to the ground, groaning, all exhausted. The park members go up to Pops, cheering, saying, Pops, that was incredible. He says, it was no trouble. But then all of a sudden, Rigby points out behind him, saying, guys, it's getting up again. And instead of the bear roaring, he's actually speaking English, and he's speaking to them, communicating. And the bear says, you have completed all the tasks and have been proven worthy. You may proceed. So then the bear starts glowing a cyan blue and then opens a portal through his body. And they're all grossed out saying, ew.
It's like right on his stomach, like on his chest and stuff, and it's glowing.
Mm-hmm.
So weird. Muscle Man is impressed. He's like, oh, that's gnarly, bro. But Mordecai walks up. He's taking the lead, and he's the one holding the box. And we could see that inside of the polar bear, there is another slide. And Mordecai's all like, oh, another one. But then Skips pushes him. He's like, just go. And then we slide down, and it looks like we have finally reached the fiery volcano. It's like a big, like, cave area, but there's, like, a huge hole in the ground. It kind of resembles the crash pit. And there's a bunch of steam coming up out of it, and sure enough, there's lava way at the bottom. And so they walk up to the lava pit, and they're like, okay, let's get this thing done and go home. But then, all of a sudden, Quilkin appears out of the smoke with a gun, saying, not so fast, and they all gasp. Benson's all like, what? How did you get down? But then Quilkin says, I use the stairs. And then we pan over, and there's like a very conveniently placed staircase with an arrow pointing up it, saying, back to the top of the mine. But the word mine is like crossed. It had replaced the word ride before. And then the entire parking kind of groans, being like, oh man, we just did all that for nothing, this and that. Quilkin says, you all had me going on quite the goose chase, didn't you? But it looks like your luck has run out, and that they're still being held over at gunpoint. Hand over the box. And then Rigby's all like, don't do it, Mordecai. But Quogan says, enough, it's mine, because it belongs to me. Don't make me do something drastic. Benson kind of admits to Fee, he's like, Mordecai, he has a gun. We did our best, just give him the box. And then Mordecai's all like, ah, sorry, Santa. And then he's slowly walking over to Quilgan with the gun still pointed at him. Quilgan's all like, yeah, that's it. Nice and slow. But then all of a sudden, Mordecai looks up and he's like, huh? And we could see the steam coming from the volcano, like the air around it starts to move. And we could kind of see a small little silhouette, like as if something is like wishing past it. And then Quilgan's all like, what the? And then his gun kind of gets knocked out of his hand and thrown down the pit. Rigby's all like, what the heck was that? And there's literally nobody around Quilgan's. We don't know what's going on. All of a sudden, everyone gasps because Santa takes off an invisibility cloak and he's floating there on his hoverboard. He's like, haha, hey, guys. And he's like, Mordecai says, Santa. And then the rest of the park members are like, oh my gosh, it is really him. Because this is their first time seeing Santa. Rigby says like, hey, wait, you said that you couldn't make invisibility cloaks. And Santa on his hoverboard, he's like, we could totally make them. And then he flies down next to them, gets off his hoverboard, and says, I just said we couldn't give them as gifts. And then Quilgan, he's all like, no, you're supposed to be dead. I shot you. And Santa says, that's right. Too bad for you. I was wearing one of these. And then he lifts up his shirt, and there was a bulletproof vest underneath it. And then Santa says, like, yeah, I was stunned for a while, but luckily my body was unscathed. He takes off the bulletproof vest to reveal a six-pack, a shiny six-pack. And there's, like, kind of like a glowing essence on his stomach. And Muscle Man's all like, oh, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Santa's got a six-pack. And I just realized the reason Muscle Man says pa-rum-pa-pum-pum is because he's... Yeah, he's singing, oh, what's that song? Little Drummer Boy?
I think so. Yeah.
Ba-rum-pum-pum-pum. I never realized that until now. That fits the theme so well.
It's a really, the jokes and, or the Christmas jokes that go through these, this episode is pretty good. The use of them is pretty smart.
That's so smart. But Quilgan says, well, good luck surviving this. And he pulls out a grenade and takes the pin out and then throws it right in front of the park members. But then Santa jumps in the way and using his hoverboard as a shield. They all like get blasted back and Quilgan gets a hold of the magical box. And he gets like a... He does a dramatic monologue being all like, it didn't have to end this way, but you ruined my dream. If we made a box for everyone, then no one would be fighting over them. Did you ever think of that? Huh, I bet you did. If everyone had everything they wanted, then why would they need Santa? And then Santa looks up and he's all like, it's not like that, Quilgan. Quilgan says, enough, you ruined my life's work, and now I'm gonna ruin yours. Give me what I desire most. And he opens the box and starts putting it to use. I want the destruction of Christmas forever. And then we get a really cool montage. And we also get a song, Carol of the Bells, which we all know and love, by Michaela Leontovich from 1936. That's the original person who wrote it, but this is a different rendition, and we're gonna go through that in lunchtime. But we have the regular show space background, and everyone's looking around, and then we get like these glowing, like a Christmas, like stickers, like everything that's like all symbolic of Christmas, like a mantle with stockings, a Christmas tree, a Christmas ham, and then milk and cookies, Christmas presents. But they're all being like stuck with TNT, and they're all glowing, and we could see like a big suburbs block of houses, and there's TNT planted all over them, and they're like a little mini Christmas tree, a shot of the city, TNT is being planted all around, and then we get a huge shot of the globe with TNT being planted all around the area. And then we finally get a shot of inside the box, and Quilgan is towering over it, and then there is a little detonator button. And Quogan is laughing evilly, saying, ha, one push of this detonator and it's all gone. But Mordecai stands up and he says, no! And he runs up to Quilgen and, like, kind of pushes up against him and tackling him in the torso. And then they start to free fall down the volcano. Mordecai and Quilgen are falling down and the Christmas box is, like, slowly following behind them. And Rigby's all like, Mordecai! So he runs over and jumps in. And then Mordecai and Quilgen are kind of like fiddling and twirling throughout the air. Quilgen pushes him away, and then they kind of like do like a little mid-air fight. There's punches and kicks. Quilgen reaches the box, but then Rigby intervenes, and then they're kind of like floating around it. And then Quilgen and Rigby both look inside of the box, and we could see Quilgen like start to imagine the detonator, so it like comes back. But then Rigby imagines a cone of ice cream, and then they kind of keep going back and forth, like detonator, ice cream, just trying to stop Quilgen from ending Christmas. Rigby finally snatches the box away, and then he's like, let go of me, and then Quilgen is holding Rigby by the ankles. We cut to Mordecai, who's hovering right above Rigby, and Rigby's still holding the box, and Mordecai says, Rigby, let go, and so Rigby lets go of the box, and then it kind of like floats up to Mordecai with the air. And then Mordecai looks inside of the box and he pulls out two hoverboards that are attached to each other for him and Rigby. And then he kind of chucks the box away. Mordecai swoops down and collects Rigby on the other hoverboard. And then they start to fly up out of the pit. And then at this point, Quilgen and the box are right at the bottom of the lava pit. Quilgen is trying to reach the box, but it's too late because the box falls into the lava, followed by Quilgen a second later, and they both concede and die inside of the Molten.
Wow. So Benson and the rest of the park gang are looking down into the lava pit, seeing if Mordecai and Rigby are still alive. But then they come out with the double hoverboards, and they all look in awe, and they're all really glad to see them alive. Mordecai and Rigby get off, and they say, it's done. They're all cheering. They're all giving their nods of approval. Pop says, Christmas is saved. And Santa Claus even gives them a nod of good job. We then fade back to the house where the park gang gets a ride from Santa Claus and they all get off. They're all waving goodbye to Santa. Muscle Man says, thanks for the ride, Santa. Goodbye, Santa, says Pops. And then Skips looks over and says, I'll call you to go bowling sometime. Benson, before going up the steps of the house, he asks Santa one final question. He says, Santa, you're like the authority on Christmas stuff, right? And he goes over to his sweater and he says, what do you think? Without hesitation, Santa says, Benson, you should have tossed that thing into the lava pit. And then Benson immediately takes off the ugly sweater and then drops it on the floor going back into the house. Santa then speaks to Mordecai and Rigby, saying, I gotta be honest, I wasn't sure if you guys could pull it off. But you really did it. You saved Christmas. Mordecai and Rigby are like, eh, it was nothing. Does this mean we'll finally make it to your nice list? Santa kind of chuckles and says, hey, crazy year things have happened. Yeah. He tells his reindeer to go off into the sky. I almost said sunset. Yeah. Into the sky. Mordecai and Rigby say bye to Santa. And Santa gives off a ho, ho, ho as he blinks into the sky, being gone. And Mordecai and Rigby look into the sky saying, dude, he said it just like in the movies. Awesome! And then they high five, and we go into the house where everyone is pretty much cleared out except for Thomas, whose head is still stuck in the stair railing, or yeah, the banisters. The banisters. Thank you. Benson is standing in front of him, and he says, "Thomas," and then Thomas wakes up, and his head is immediately out of the banister. He says, "Huh?
I wonder what Thomas was up to when they were all gone." I don't know.
I wonder too. He probably got a few drinks in his mouth and then he probably just fell asleep.
Oh yeah, we'll say that he did that.
Yep. Mordecai and Rigby walk into the living room saying, "That was awesome." Benson with his arms on his hips saying, "All right, you two, you got a house to clean." And they're both like, "Oh, what?" But Benson tells him, like, "Oh, don't worry, I'll give you a hand. It's Christmas. I'll be back to go get the cleaning supplies. But that doesn't matter. They both are like, "Oh, man." But then by the Christmas tree, they spot a present. Mordecai and Rigby run over to go investigate what it is. They pick it up and read it. And it says to Mordecai and Rigby. So they both rip open the present and open it. And then Rigby pulls out a note. And it says, "Sometimes you gotta break the rules." And they both look at each other in confusion. And then a little bit later, Benson comes back with the cleaning supplies. And he says, "Okay, guys, let's..." And then stops because he notices that they aren't there in the living room anymore. So then he groans and then walks back to the kitchen. We're still staying in the living room. And then we see that Mordecai and Rigby actually got the invisibility cloaks that they asked for since they were little. And they both say, "Best gift ever." They pick up their video game controllers. And then we get that classic pan out from the window to a wide shot into the house. And we go up to see the sky where Santa is flying, doing his iconic "Ho, ho, ho, Merry Christmas." And then as he's going up into the sky, he turns and then does a Back to the Future DeLorean time. Was it? I don't even know.
Street lane is like on fire on each side.
Yeah.
Classic ending. So yeah, and then that's where we cut to black, ending the episode. Very cool.
Very awesome.
Also, I had a note about when the camera panned out of the house after Mordecai and Rigby got the invisibility cloaks.
All right.
You'll see at 22 minutes exactly, kind of around there, we actually see a 3D animation with kind of how the screen moves out. And I think that's the first time we've ever seen that in the show. And it's a really cool effect.
It's quick, it's kind of unnoticeable, but you can tell that it happened.
So yeah, that's that. That's how we end off the episode, and that was a pretty good Christmas story. And
that was a really good Christmas. You know what? Maybe now I'm hyped for the Christmas.
You know, I was literally just like saying how excited I am for the hot weather. And then, you know what, I'm not excited for the winter, like the snow, but I do love the crisp, like getting into the Christmas spirit.
I do too. Every single year I try to get into the Christmas mood. You know, I would put up a Santa hat on, you know, tell people Merry Christmas when it's only November, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly. You know, make some Christmas ham, drink some eggnog, and you could do that at lunchtime.
Lunchtime! It's lunchtime.
All right, so I'm going to be reading straight off the fan wiki like I always do, and there is a lot of stuff here today, so...
Oh, God, okay.
Trivia for this episode. This marks the first Christmas episode in the series, and it marks the second episode to use a cold open and a opening title similar to Exit 9B. Santa reveals that any myths about him are made up from advertisement companies, and Gene is revealed to have a family. We get two guest voice actors, Ed Asner and Thomas Hayden Church, make guest appearances in this episode. Ed Asner provides the voice of Santa, while Thomas provides the voice of Quilligan. And I forgot when it was, but a couple years ago, Ed Asner actually passed away. So, yeah. This episode is dedicated to you, Ed Asner. Thank you so much for what you did for a regular show. And I also really enjoyed him in Pixar's Up because he was Carl.
Did you know he was also Santa Claus and Elf?
You know, so that makes so much sense that why he came here for the regular show.
When I was watching the episode and I heard Santa, I'm like, he sounds so familiar, especially when he did the iconic ho, 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 Merry Christmas. I'm like, wait a second.
This episode also received an Emmy nomination for Outstanding Animated Program in 2013, but it lost to the South Park episode Raising the Bar.
You know what? Fair play. That's understandable.
Episode connections. I'm not sure how much I could really say, but there is a flashback in a future episode while the park workers were saving Christmas. What was going on in the meanwhile with other people? Just gonna leave it at that.
Nice. Good cover up.
Pop culture references. So two real life songs play in the special. Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree by Brenda Lee and Carol of the Bells, which I said was originally written by Michaela Leontovich, but this was a re-recording and a rendition by Savatage and the same arrangement by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Have you heard that rendition?
I probably over the years.
It honestly, I stumbled upon it one time, and it was probably one of the greatest discoveries I made during Christmas.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone like during the holidays, you've gone to different neighborhoods and seen the different Christmas decorations? I forgot what it was called.
Oh yeah, there's actually like a website that gives you a little like Euler circuit of like the participating houses, and then you turn you like tune on your radio because it is like synced up with the lights and stuff, and it's really cool. So this past Christmas, actually, me and my family actually drove around and we looked at the Christmas lights. It was really fun, and some houses were more impressive than the others, because there were houses where like, wow, this is such a cool light show. But then we pulled up to other houses and we're like, why'd you even put your house on the list? Because this is terrible.
I saw, there's this one house that I pass by every single time I'm visiting my grandma's place. And they have the same exact decorations from like 20 years ago.
Damn. Continuing on with pop culture references. This episode has, like Josh said, it has many references to the Lord of the Rings franchise. When Mordo and Riggs tell the others what happened, Muscleman says, well, what are we waiting for? And attempts to smash the box. That is a reference when Gimli tries to smash the ring. When Quilgan shows Santa Claus his plans for the magic box, they are written in a language similar to Elvish from Lord of the Rings. And the box destruction, as well as Quilgan's death, is a reference to Gollum's fiery demise in the movie. And I have not seen Lord of the Rings, so I just got a spoiler. Great.
It's fine. It's like saying Dobby is... I don't know what the fuck Dobby is from Harry Potter. I've never seen it.
Oh, that's another pop culture reference, and they actually didn't even list it, but the invisibility cloak is obviously a reference from Harry Potter.
Oh, duh. Yeah, Jesus.
Also, I had the note, I am offended that this fan wiki didn't even mention Back to the Future.
Are you serious?
They didn't even mention it. That is the most obvious, like,
there's
pop culture
things
reference
in it.
There's more. So, well, first of all, Santa is inspired by Doc. Because he kind of looks like him. He dresses like him. He rides a hoverboard. He wears a bulletproof vest that ends up being the plot twist. He even disappears in that fiery lane of flames in the end. So that's like, well, 1, 2, 3, 4 Back to the Future references that the fan wiki didn't even catch.
Crazy. I guess they're not fans of Back to the Future.
Production notes. This was actually the last regular show episode to air in 2012, so we're on to 2013. Wow. And now we have goofs, and we actually have a lot of them. It kind of seems like most of them are just animation issues. So the guests and the Christmas ornaments in the kitchen disappear when Muscle Man is complimenting the cookies. At first, when Benson is talking to Audrey, a person is sitting far away from her, but during the close-up shot, she has teleported next to Audrey. There is also no Christmas stockings hanging until Audrey starts talking to Benson. And then in that same scene, Thomas is seen walking down the stairs. But in the next shot, he disappears. I think I saw that one.
Yeah.
When going to Skips' garage, Mordecai and Rigby's scarves disappear from their necks. And then the petrol pump is not shown when Santa Claus crashes into the garage, but it reappears when Mordo and Riggs enter. Also, the man in the test room is shown with the pipe in his mouth, despite not having it in any other scene. When Gene tells the park gang that he'll try to hold off Quilligan, the Christmas box disappears. In a few scenes during the wrestling match between the polar bear and Pops, the symbols in the circle will disappear. When Benson gives Pops his shirt and his top hat after the bear is defeated, his left arm of the sleeve is colored blue for some reason. And then also...
I never noticed that.
Yeah, and then also, while Quilligan is destroying Christmas, Benson's sweater is colored blue. When Benson, at the end, offers to clean the house with Mordo and Riggs, the stockings disappear off of the mantle. And finally, when Gene's wife appears, she is colored red, even though in the future episode Chili Cook-Off, she's colored green in the photo.
Oh, it's a different lady!
Gene's cheating! He's dispensing his coins into another machine.
Oh, that's...
alternate versions. So this is a different version that we actually have in the UK, and it looks like there is a video that is on YouTube where you could see the full list of episode censorships, and we are going to link this video on the Twitter, because usually when we read alternate versions, we just read it to you, but it's cool that we have a vid. But anyway, the scene showing Quilligan shooting Santa Claus was cut in the UK, but for whatever reason, the second part of the episode, whenever there's a gun and Santa reveals that he had a bulletproof vest, that was not cut. So I don't know why it was cut the first time. Any scenes showing the bullet holes in Santa's chest were digitally removed, but after spinning the first time on his hoverboard, the bullet holes were visible when he's falling. So that's weird. And then Santa's line saying, "Well, sorry to disappoint you, but I was just shot at and fell 3,500 feet." That line was removed.
What did he say instead? Just nothing? That whole bit was cut out?
I guess he didn't say anything and it just went to the next line.
All right, then.
So yeah, that's all we have at the fan wiki. That was a lot, but this was a long episode.
Yep.
So take it away.
So, in the Season 4, Episode 9, the regular show Christmas special, who were the protagonists of the episode?
I wrote that it was the entire park gang and Santa.
I also thought it was them. So, clearly, we have an antagonist for this episode, and that would be Quilligan.
Quilligan. Am I right? Yep, you're right.
You called him Gene, which I still think is funny.
Yeah, I almost called him Gene like at the very end, but I stopped myself.
Were there any O's or hmms that you counted in this episode?
Surprisingly, there were zero of either of them.
I was expecting to hear at least an O.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any adult jokes made during this episode?
So there weren't any like blatant adult jokes, but I kind of saw Rigby fixing that snowman as a little nod, you know?
Yeah. Were there any iconic regular show moments?
I wrote the final Christmas battle was pretty good.
I also thought that was pretty iconic. I was going to say like this entire episode in general, but I think that ending was more iconic than that.
Yeah.
And we already mentioned this before, but there were two licensed songs used. Yep. Or real life songs used in this episode.
Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, Brenda Lee, 1958. Carol of the Bells, the Sabotage version, but the song was originally from 1936, Michaela Levantovich.
Cool. So, on a scale of 1 to 5, how memorable is this episode?
I gave this a 5.
I gave this a 5 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you say this is a skip or a must-watch episode?
It's funny because, well, first, it is a must-watch.
Yes.
It clearly is a must watch, but the only reason I do skip it is because it's seasonal. I like, if it comes on, I don't watch it, but if it comes on and it's Christmas time, I'll watch it, you know? So it's nothing about the episode, it's just that it happens to fall in the Christmas season.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But well, it is a must watch.
Yes.
Yes. So since we both agree on it being a must-watch, would you say it's a good or a bad episode?
I'm sure we could both say that this was a really good episode.
What?
It was a very good episode.
What?
This is how you do a Christmas special. It's right here.
Exactly. Aw, man, I could talk about like how they described Quogan's background and everything, but we just don't have time for that because we've been recording for an hour and 42 minutes.
Yeah, and I am very hungry, even though we're having lunchtime right now. What kind of scam is this? But anyway, in the entire series of Regular Show, we are left with 113 O's and 76 hmms in total. And now that we've broken down the show, Josh, would you say that ChatGPT was accurate or inaccurate with this episode? Did Mordor and Riggs accidentally ruin the Christmas display and travel through time?
No, ChatGPT was very inaccurate with what this episode was about.
And this has been Regular Chat. All right. So if you want to see that video of the censorships in the United Kingdom for this episode, that will be linked on our Twitter, which is @excellentpod. Go ahead and follow us while you are there. And you could also see what me and Josh are doing when we are not recording. If you also want to see me and Josh on video, we have a group YouTube channel, which is the Schwam Squad. And you'll also see some of the other guest hosts that we've had on this show before. And Josh, do you have anything else?
Merry Christmas in 9 months.
Merry Christmas. No, get back to work. My elves are, you're fired. Or even though I'm nothing without you guys. Ho, ho, ho. You know, that is true. The elves do all the work, but Santa takes all the credit.
He does. That's absurd. I don't know. Let's protest against Santa.